Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Today on the show, Neil Coulong will join us to talk about the Steelers. Let's give the Steelers a lot of credit. 1 minute, you're thinking about the first overall pick in the draft. The next minute, you're thinking about the Super Bowl. That is one schizophrenic team. We'll talk to Neil Coulong about that. And we'll also talk today with Bob Flounders from the Patriot News and PennLive.com about Penn State football. So that's all coming up on today's broadcast extravaganza. We have some interesting stuff to talk about today as well, including the NCAA saying no to a Kuwait and Afghanistan vet about playing basketball at Oakland University. Something about his transcript from 5 years ago. Like, okay, I mean, this guy was on the hated duty of body retrieval. Because of his efforts, more than 30 people, family members across this country, were able to at least get the remains of their loved ones back because of this guy's efforts. Okay? He did more in Afghanistan than the people making the decision in Indianapolis have ever done. Okay? Ever. Ever. I mean, amazing story. Always loving these guys. I always love the NCAA guys were, and like this guy's biggest decision every day was really, really hard. You know, how do you handle this? How do you handle, I mean, he was involved in firefights and things like that. I mean, these guys, the biggest decision they make during the course of the week is like, you know, how many paper clips do we order? And then they go home and complain about, you won't believe how many paper clips we ordered today over at the NCAA. It's awful, terrible. We had Mr. Buhner there today. Do we have Bob on today? Do we have anybody on today?
If Bob's not here today.
Oh, okay. Bob's not here today. Okay, so no Bob. Okay. I always love Bob's perspective when it comes to the NCAA. He's got the, he usually is, doesn't hold back too much. How about that? Holds back nothing. So the Penn State's going to have, obviously, its game coming up with Maryland on Saturday. That'll be a noon kick, 10:30 airtime. Don't forget, tomorrow we have our high school football previews tomorrow. All right, we have our football announcers on. My brother, who cannot now make the trip into State College due to unforeseen circumstances, is still going to join us on Friday to make picks. And right now he's burying me. And I mean buried. Now, on the Penn State Network talk show tomorrow night, we'll not only have James Franklin, but we're going to have Frank Molinaro on the show tomorrow. Talk about his Olympic experience. Pretty good little homecoming show, I think. So looking forward to that. We'll be down at Letterman Sports Grill for that. Paging Buck Showalter. Remember Britton, who saved all those games for you this year? He's available. How do you play an 11-inning game and never use him? We just talked about this yesterday on the show. We just talked about this. That you manage a one-game playoff differently than the regular season. We just talked about this. And here's a guy that I think is a very good manager. For the most part, I think he's a very savvy manager. And he hits a foul ball. Ubaldo Jimenez? Really? You got the season on the line? Hi, Bob.
Hey, Steve. Apparently there was a little car accident. I couldn't get up to the station.
You know what? We ran into that with a TV show this morning, one of our hosts.
Yeah?
It wasn't a car accident. It was PennDOT cutting down trees on 322. You're like, what?
Well, it's you couldn't get up here to Broadcast Mountain. Apparently some vehicle hit a telephone pole and knocked out all the juice throughout the valley here, and the roads were all blocked to get up here.
Wow.
So luckily I have a one of those lightweight airplanes in the back of my car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Turned it on, up the mountain I went. So I'm in good shape now, but traffic's a little skewered, so to speak. Sorry about that.
I thought the suit wasn't allowed to drive for 2 weeks.
Well, there was another component to his medical issues.
I see, yeah. Yeah. But we're talking about the NCAA.
Yes.
Now, this guy, okay, is out of a Baltimore high school. So he goes into the military, and eventually they station him in Kuwait and Kandahar, Afghanistan. Well, it turns out he's not a bad hoops player. And a couple of guys on the USO tours and so forth see this guy play and say, you know, he's not that bad. You know, he's not going to be a Power 5 conference guy or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not bad. So he ends up, once he's done with his tour, enrolling at Oakland in Michigan.
Sure.
And the NCAA said, nah, ineligible. We're looking at his transcripts, ineligible. Well, his transcripts, A, aren't that bad. But this guy's done more than the entire NCAA board combined. Okay. Here is what he has been awarded in his lifetime. His name is Isaiah Brock. All right?
Yeah.
In his lifetime, in the 4 years he spent in the military, in which, yes, he was involved in gunfire, shot at, and so forth, but was able to get home the remains, the bodies of 30 service members. That was his job. And along the way, let's see, I'm trying to see what he's got a number of citations here. Let's see, he has received, bum, 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 bum. He's been awarded the Army Commendation Medal, a National Defense Service Medal, a Global War on Terrorism Medal, Army Service Ribbon, Certificate of Achievement. And the NCAA says you can't play hoops.
Well, it only is one other nail in the coffin of why most people, certainly in Pennsylvania and elsewhere, think that the NCAA comes up with some absolutely absurd results.
Well, he participated in the Hardwood Classic in August 2015. He's allowed to play. And he did so, I think it was in Kuwait he did this. And what it does is it connects soldiers with basketball coaches and culminates in a tournament. Well, Oakland's coach, Greg Campy, was there. And he first heard about troops first from Tommy Izzo. So he thought it was great. He goes over there, the whole deal. Campy ends up playing golf at Oakland Hills Country Club with Raquel, who works with troops first. And Campy relayed to him interest in traveling to the Middle East, and Kel told him that, hey, okay, be great to have you there, so why don't you come along? So Campy ends up going to Kuwait, and he goes there with Steve Lavin, Dino Gaudio, Jimmy Patsos, Pete Gillen, Gary Stewart, Ed Conroy, Reggie Minton, and so forth. And so Campy then meets Isaiah Brock, who's on Lavin's team. He said, so we scrimmaged Lavin's team one day, and there's this 6A kid who actually looks like he can play a little bit. So I got to talking to him. He said, when I found out about his story, I thought, wow, here's a guy whose job it is to go into the battlefield, okay, into the battlefield, and he extracts bodies. It's an awful job, but it's a dangerous job. And medics go, and they, you know, and they get wounded. And the ones who can't make it, it's his job to get them out. Well, Brock told Campy he planned to attend college after he was discharged. So Campy said, hey, why don't you consider Oakland? Well, the kid goes to the Oakland campus. And he started taking, actually, courses online first while he was still serving. And he took two classes, and he got a B in both. And so he's discharged from the Army this past April. So he enrolls at Oakland in June. He took two summer school classes. He got an A in one and the B in the, other. So now he's got an A in three Bs. So now he's on the Oakland Student Athlete Advisory Committee, and he's been mentoring and tutoring younger athletes. So obviously this young man's a disgrace. All right.
Yeah. No maturity whatsoever.
Right. Now, he graduated from Forest Park High School in Baltimore. And it's, you know, as a school, only 70% of the students there graduate, and only 6% meet the standard for college readiness. Well, what they've done is they've looked back at his high school transcript, and they don't want to let him play. Now, he does have a qualifying standardized test score. I don't know if it's SAT or ACT, but his score qualifies. And he's already shown he can do college-level work. He already has an A and three Bs. And the NCAA is using this transcript thing against him.
Well,
after a while, what do these people think?
Yeah.
You gotta leave the building sometimes. You gotta leave the building, get a little fresh air. Actually, get out, be among the people, get your hands dirty a little bit.
It's amazing that the NCAA never actually learns from the mistakes they've made in the past.
Well, he's going to, you know, he's going to play now.
Yeah, no question.
Now it's been made a national deal about this. Somebody's going to say, we look bad. We need to do something.
Yeah.
Do something. Let him play.
We all know that the NCAA is public relations sensitive. That's for sure.
No question about it. But they're also an unaware group. And
yeah.
I already related the story about the law in Indiana where, like, they lived there, for goodness sakes, and none of them knew about it. You're like, okay.
Yeah, right.
Right. And I related that story back when it happened a year and a half ago. But the NCAA does have the power to apply a waiver and make Isaiah Brock eligible immediately.
I think that'll happen rather soon.
Now, they just started basketball practice.
Yeah.
So he's not that far behind.
Now, is
everybody,
Oakland...
Everybody's allowed to start on Friday.
Is Oakland a lower end D1, Division One, or
yes.
Are they okay?
Yeah. I mean, Oakland would be a mid major.
Sure.
Yeah, they'd be in the mid range. A lot of teams don't like playing Oakland. They're usually pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're not great, but they, you know, not great, awesome, incredible, but they're usually very good, and they've usually been good enough to win the conference and get the automatic bid to the tournament.
I mean, Dick Vitale coached in Detroit. Same.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Yep.
I had a friend who was hired to be the Westminster College, my alma mater, new lacrosse coach. Started the program last year. He's a West Point graduate. Did three tours in Afghanistan and Iraq. And when he interviewed the committee at the college, said, "Well, you understand how difficult this is going to be, starting up a program from scratch. We've never have a tradition. There's not a big recruiting base in the area immediate to the college." He said, "Well, let me ask you, when we start playing games, will the other side have M1s or Kalashnikov rifles and be shooting back. They go, no. He goes, no problem then. I've had that. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, exactly. I mean, these guys have been through so much, for goodness sake.
Yeah, and this and Isaiah the same way. He's been through a lot. He's mature, obviously, and he'll handle this quite well, unlike the NCAA.
Look, he's good for the game.
Oh,
you know that?
Absolutely.
Guy like this, this is a guy you want around the game. By the way, Penn State, of course, will play Duke on November 19th. There's a pretty good chance that, well, I don't know, it's a 50-50 shot whether Harry Giles, the number one recruit in the country, will be able to play. He had a scope done in his knee over the weekend. And he's out at least, it's his left knee, and he's probably unable to play for 6 weeks.
Is that one of the tournaments in the early going?
Yeah, it's the Mohegan Sun tournament. That's the one I'm going to do the Duke game at 12:30. Get done 2:30, 3 o'clock, drive to Rutgers, do the football game at night, drive back to Connecticut, do the game the next day. So
I'm going to say, Connecticut, are you familiar with the state of Connecticut?
Think I can handle this part. Got it.
Okay. No need for a GPS on this road trip.
No need for GPS. I even know how to, I should know how to get around most stuff, too. So,
okay, that's good.
Yeah.
That'll be a challenge for you.
Getting to Rutgers will be a challenge only because I don't know what to expect about traffic.
How about parking for you? Are they going to take care of you in that realm?
There we are. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Neil Coulong in a few moments. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Bob Flounder is coming up in the next half hour from the Patriot News and PennLive.com to talk about Penn State football. Their showdown with Maryland coming up this weekend. Just a few moments, we'll talk about the Steelers, who have gone from people feeling they should have the first overall pick in the draft and now winning the Super Bowl just in a matter of 7 days. Really is a different way of looking at it. But first of all, this day in sports history. And on this day in sports history, this October the 5th, with the baseball playoffs continuing tonight with the Mets, by the way, taking on the Giants. That'll be at Citi Field tonight. Noah Syndergaard on the mound tonight for the Mets. And Madison Bumgarner on the mound for the Giants tonight. 1919, Enzo Ferrari debuted in his first race. He later founded Auto Avio Ferrari, an independent manufacturing company. Enzo Ferrari, one of Bob Buehner's heroes. Big hero. 1921, the World Series was broadcast on radio for the first time between the New York Giants and the New York Yankees. Also on this date, in 1983, Wayne Gretzky began a streak of scoring that covered 51 straight games. 2001, Barry Bonds, homers 71 and 72.
2003, the Cubs won their first postseason series since the 1908 World Series. And then Bartman happened to them in the National League Championship Series against the Marlins. Dante Hall of the Chiefs, 2003, returned an NFL record fourth straight game for a touchdown. He scored his fourth touchdown at a return in only five games. Amazing. Let's bring in Neil Coolong now to talk about the Steelers. Neil, welcome. Well, 1 week total despair where Steeler fans feel like they're getting the first overall pick of the draft. And now, after beating Kansas City, they suddenly feel like they're going to win the Super Bowl.
Of course. If you cut them off drafting first like it was the previous week and now the obvious win in the Super Bowl, they're probably 10-6, 11-5, somewhere in that range. And that's if they could get through the ever pesky New York Jets without really an offensive line. So I have a feeling we'll have another opinion next week.
Yeah, I mean, every week it's different. They go from the first overall pick in the draft after the Eagles to lifting the Lombardi Trophy after beating Kansas City. Okay, well done. Did Roethlisberger, though, seem to have a better rhythm to you on Sunday night?
Yeah, he definitely did. I think there was kind of that, when Ben wants an aerial attack, he puts one on. And you saw that from the first play. They wanted to set the tone early in that game and show them that they did not really respect Kansas City secondary. If a secondary is going to come in and play this team in man-on-man, regardless of their front seven, they're going to get the ball deep down the field. And I think Kansas City just really got blown away right off the bat. They're not as bad as the score indicated, I don't think. I don't think the gap between the two teams is that bad. But the Steelers have put up 35-plus points on teams that play them in man consistently. I don't understand why many of them still continue to do it. But that's what they had, and the Steelers took advantage.
I know Bell had his yards late in the game, but what kind of influence can he have on the Steelers' offensive balance?
I think it's huge. I think we saw it in that game. He really occupied their linebackers. They have to account for him all over the field. And when you have him on the field, I mean, Ben really can go to the line with seven plays in mind. There are a lot of different things they can do depending on what the defense wants to do pre-snap, how they're going to look to defend Bell. There are a lot of different options. You saw him exploit that in times, putting Williams on the field with him as well. They're going to show that they can run. They can show that they can throw deep, that they can throw short. A lot of different things that they can do. And that's really when they're at their most dangerous level. And it's because of Bell. It's the versatility that he has. It gives them a lot more offense. I think that's really what's been missing over the last 3 weeks or the first 3 weeks of the season. They didn't have that. They really kind of had to grind it out a lot of times. Now they can do pretty much whatever they're going to want to do, in pre-snap. And when you have a quarterback that's as smart as Roethlisberger directing all of that, you're going to have a big offensive game.
Yeah, makes a big difference for them. Defensively, did momentum just play a big role in what we saw defensively in this game, or are there certain things that they did schematically that were important?
I think it was more just the mindset going into it. They got their butts beat badly the previous week, and with that it brought out a different level of focus. It kind of woke them up to the fact that they're capable of getting killed. They're capable of getting beaten badly by a good team in the NFL. They know that they had that against Kansas City, and they were going to have to step up their game. And I think really, from my perspective, I didn't see any mistakes, really. I mean, there were some, obviously, but not as many glaring ones as there were against the Eagles. You take that out of the game, out of the equation completely for the Steelers, they're a really tough team to beat. And when they get hot the way that they did, they're distributing the ball well. They have a pretty good balance going, but they're operating from, kind of that muddle that Roethlisberger calls it. Not exactly a no huddle, but he's calling plays at the line of scrimmage. When they get into a rhythm with that, from an execution standpoint, they seem to be much more in command over what they're doing. It seemed a lot more plodding and sluggish against Philadelphia, but they got past that this week. So I think that's kind of a schematic thing. Kansas City just didn't match up with them in anything that they tried to do, especially early in the game, and they took advantage of it.
Defensively, they're missing so many guys in this thing. They, bumped up, got hurt, out, the whole deal. So in some ways, was that a perfect night because the offense was rolling so well that they can just survive a game like that and then go to the next one and eventually get some of these guys back?
Yeah, I think it's definitely an advantage. It shows the huge amount of difference between replacing a starter in the middle of a game versus giving the backup a week to prepare. And we saw that with the level of play from B.J. Finney at left guard. I thought he played very well considering his background, where he's come from, and the time that he's put in, really, to get his first significant action of his career. I thought Jordan Dangerfield, who's basically in the same position as Vinny, just a little bit more time in the practice squad on his resume, he played very well, filling in for both Rob Golden and Sean Davis, who didn't get a whole lot of time in. They had a week to prepare as opposed to being thrown on the field in the middle of the game. The reality is you only have so much time to practice, and you've got to get your starters ready to go. You can't plan for injuries. So putting them in cold without a whole lot of work with the same first-string players each week, it really makes a difference. And they're going to have that challenge again this week against the Jets.
Yeah, no question they're going to have a challenge against the Jets. So give me a thumbnail on what you think of the Jets so far, because it certainly has been an odd roller coaster for them.
I think the Jets, top to bottom, really, Ryan Fitzpatrick has not played very smart football. I think he's given the ball away in situations he shouldn't have far more often than I think an average quarterback would. He's really held them down. You're talking about a team, though, that can win every single week just simply because they have an excellent defensive front seven. And they're matched up now with a Steelers team that's losing, I think, what's the count now, 3/5 of their offensive line or something like
right.
that.
Yep.
You're probably going to have Finney starting again. It looks like Chris Hubbard's going to get worked in, and it's not typically known as a real successful formula if Chris Hubbard is involved with the starting unit on this team. They're talking about maybe having Maurkice Pouncey take some snaps at right tackle and move Hubbard either to guard and Finney then to center.
Right.
They're going to have to change up a lot of their offensive line. And when you're going against guys like Mo Wilkerson, Sheldon Richardson, you're really going to have a problem. And that, you know, I think the Steelers are a better team top to bottom. But when you have that big of a matchup advantage, that can swing the game. So I honestly expect this to be close. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure. It's going to be a very physical game. The Steelers are the better team, but that matchup alone might be enough for the Jets to pull it off.
What's the update on Gilbert, and what are the options there for the Steelers?
Gilbert won't play this week. They've already said that. Fortunately, it doesn't sound like it's a real long-term injury, but he's definitely going to be out this week. And right now, it looks like Hubbard is slated to start at right tackle. Hubbard's a guard. Hubbard's a player that they basically tried out in the preseason just for the sake of filling out the roster at tackle. He's not experienced. And even then, he played left tackle. He didn't even play right tackle. So it's really an odd situation. And they're going to have to kind of find a way to scheme around this, because you're looking at Muhammad Wilkerson on Chris Hubbard on that offensive right side. You can't feel real confident about that if you're a Steelers fan. Wilkerson's one of the best in the game, and Hubbard's never played the position. Weirder things have happened, but I think Wilkerson's going to have himself a game. I mean, the season before, he beat up pretty badly on Gilbert. Gilbert's a much better player than Hubbard is, so that's going to be tough.
What do you think, Neil, about the level of play in the NFL right now? I really had a chance, you know, because I've had a lot of things in the last month, you know, different games I've had to do and so forth, so I didn't really get a chance to watch a lot of the NFL. Well, I finally got a chance to watch a lot of it this weekend. I didn't find it to be an intelligent level of play. Play selections, plays underneath when you're trying to work the clock, things like that, use of timeouts. What have you thought about the level of play and the intelligence of play in the NFL?
I think that's a great question. It's something like it almost feels like it hasn't really started yet. You know, I've seen the Steelers play at a high level a couple times. I've seen them play at a terrible level for four quarters of play against Philadelphia. Looking around the rest of the league, I've seen a lot of really just kind of odd stuff. I don't know if it's decision as much. It just doesn't seem to be as intense as I remember it in the past. And part of me was almost wondering if I'm not kind of painting that picture, because we're seeing Matt Ryan take that, you know, early quarterback MVP vote, and it's Matt Ryan. It's not Tom Brady. It's not Peyton Manning. These are the guys that have led the NFL over the last decade, and those are two players that always came out of the gates, you know, smoking hot. And Ryan is doing that now. And then we're seeing pretty bad quarterback play from Cam Newton. We're not seeing great consistent play from Aaron Rodgers. Russell Wilson's been up and down. Andrew Luck has largely been a disaster to this point. It almost seems to me like the quarterback play is not as real high level as it has been over the last like decade or so. And I'm obviously painting with a very broad brush, but it just doesn't seem to be there. And to me, to boil it down, it almost seems like, well, this is almost what it's like when you don't have Manning and Brady in the league.
Right.
You know, this is kind of the future of things right now. All these young players who are supposed to step up and dominate aren't doing it. And what you're getting is Matt Ryan. it's not, you know, it wasn't exactly expected to be that way. I mean, you expect Joe Flacco to have a rating of 75. You didn't really count on Jameis Winston, you know, having a 110 rating after four games. But you're not really getting it from a whole lot of guys. You're getting a lot of decent play, but not a lot of great quarterback play. I think that's really kind of it kind of puts a damper on things. It's not the NFL that we've gotten used to seeing over the last 10 years or so.
Because you and I both know that practice during the course of the week for teams in the NFL is a lot of situational stuff. All right, two-minute drill, this is how we handle it. Four-minute offense, this is how we handle it. Third down play, this is how we handle it. And yet when I'm watching practical application, they all act like they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we've seen that a couple times. When you say stuff like that, it always makes me think of Cincinnati. It's always really weird with Cincinnati because you have such a very experienced coach, and you've had great coaches go through Cincinnati. You know, and maybe not Jay Gruden's probably not having quite the success that I thought he would have, but I'm not surprised with the way that Mike Zimmer's team's playing in Minnesota right now.
Mm-hmm.
Hugh Jackson, I think, is a phenomenal coach, and the fact that he's gotten Cleveland competitive in two of their four games is a minor miracle. But when it comes to situational football, Lewis always kind of seems to lack things like that. You bring it up, and yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me to see it, but it does seem kind of odd. There are a lot of, you know, blown plays in big situations. There are a lot of kind of mismanaged situations that you're kind of used to seeing run a different way, and then it's a complete disaster after that. And you don't even have to look any, you know, you don't have to point at Chuck Pagano, who's kind of a king of this right now. How Chuck Pagano still has a job is still kind of sketchy to me. But Gus Bradley's kind of doing the same thing in Jacksonville. That was a I don't know if you bothered watching any of that game, but that was interesting, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I did. I watched it. Yeah.
No, that was not fun to watch at all. I don't care what time of the day it was on. That was just bad.
It was brutal.
Neither of those teams are interesting to watch right now. Yeah, with that, I think it kind of puts a bad taste in your mouth. And you know, we're not seeing a flawless team right now. We're not seeing anybody that seems unbeatable. As well as Denver has played, I'm not trusting Trevor Siemian or Paxton Lynch consistently over time.
No.
I'm just not. I don't. You know, I watched the Bengals Broncos game. In which Siemian played really, really well. He was player of the week, and I thought he left a ton on the table. It spoke to me more. Cincinnati's defense is an utter disaster right now, which is not something we've seen recently out of them. They've been a lot better. They have a lot more talent than they have, but a guy like Trevor Siemian should not be carving him up the way that he did, especially with the amount of opportunities he did miss in that game. But you do have the Broncos defense is playing at an other level right now. The Vikings defense is the same way. Seattle looks to be back to that Legion of Boom style that they had back in 2013. So maybe it's a defensive year. Maybe, you know, defenses are just rattling quarterbacks a lot more than they have recently, which to me, I wouldn't mind a whole lot, to be honest.
Because the college game, for example, I mean, you want to talk about points? They roll up points, lots and lots of points. The NFL is more of a homogenized game. Is the fact that it's a homogenized game allow coordinators to catch on to what the offense is doing?
I think if you look at it historically, it's cyclical. You'll have one trend in the NFL that does really well, and it kind of dies off. But
that's fair.
I think I've mentioned this on your show before. I heard a really great quote from Bill Parcells once. Basically, he said the NFL is what the college game gives us, because essentially they're playing in these schemes and packages. These are the guys that you have the most tape on. It only makes sense naturally that you're going to have these players playing that kind of a role in the NFL. If you put them out of that, if you take them out of their lane, they're probably not going to be the same player. So why did you draft them? Mm-hmm. They kind of look to take what the college game is giving them. In that sense, they've had a lot of time to rack up points the way that they have. In this era of the NFL, it's really been about scoring. And you still see that in college, but I think defenses are really starting to catch up. I think you're getting these uber athletes playing off the edge, and you're getting a lot of them that play at a very high level. That's really the only way to neutralize the quarterback in today's game, even if they are flagging for late hits and things like that. You're hitting the quarterback. That's pretty much the only way you can take the quarterback out of the game. And if you're not doing that, you're going to give up a lot of points. I just think the teams have done a lot better within their front seven, because I think you're seeing better and better athletes get bigger and bigger at the college level, they're able to come into the pros and really play in more of a specialized manner. They're really just going to go after the quarterback. They're not going to be these three down players anymore the way that they used to. Of course, you're going to have some to do that, but your superstars don't have to be on the field three downs of defense to make a significant impact. You know, Seattle kind of introduced that a couple of years ago. They were rotating pretty much their entire defense. I think there were only two players that played in their front seven. There were only two guys that played 80% or more of their snaps. They rotated guys in and out, and all of them got after the quarterback. And they had eight guys with like four sacks or more or something like that. Just ridiculous team depth. And I think we've seen that more and more coming from the college game. A lot more guys are ready to play on Sunday. And that's, you know, to me, that contributes to a better defensive game.
Interesting. Neil, thanks so much. Appreciate the time as always.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulon joining us, back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.